That's such a win when you're going into a partnership and you can actually go to them, your clients, and say, hey, I'm doing this partnership. Here's all the great things. Oh, and also I can help you with these things that you didn't even know were an option before.
Welcome to A Day at DPL, a thought leadership podcast series hosted by DPL founder and CEO David Lau. Tune in as David and other industry leaders explore emerging trends, product innovation, technology, and practice management strategies, sharing practical insights to help advisors accelerate growth and deliver better outcomes for their clients.
Welcome, Sarah Baker, to A Day at DPL podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good, David. Thanks for having me join your podcast.
Yeah, great to have you, Sarah. For those of you who don't know, Sarah is with Allworth, one of the leading RIA firms in the industry. And it's been such an evolving industry. I can't wait to start talking a bit about Allworth, but let's talk about Sarah and your role and a bit of your arc, you know, kind of in the M&A world with an RIA, but you didn't kind of start that way. Where did you start?
Yeah, so I've had an interesting career. I don't know if I would have thought I'd be where I am now when I was going to law school and then graduating from law school a long time ago. But like a lot of attorneys, you make the decision, you go in-house right away, you go work at a big law firm, a regional law firm, whatever it is. But I went to a really large law firm and was in the financial services sector of that firm. I practiced for about 5.5 years and decided I wanted to go in-house. And there's something in the water in Kansas City, I felt like, with really large RIAs.
That's
Creative,
right.
Mariner, Prime. It was Financial Engines at one point, which is now Edelman. But I went in-house at Mariner Wealth Advisors when Mariner was doing a lot of M&A or wanted to start doing a lot of M&A. So yeah, decided I didn't want to necessarily bill hours anymore. I love spending time with clients, though. So that was really important when I went in-house at Mariner. I was like, I really want to spend as much time as I can with advisors. And then that really morphed into more than M&A, but spent the first couple of years focused on deals and lots of different types of deals, which was really fun. I didn't even know what was possible. And I feel like that was when the wealth management industry really, I wouldn't say started growing up, but it was very cottage.
And not to date yourself, but like, give us some timeline. Like, what years are we talking about here? Because these are like some fairly early years in RIA M&A.
That's right. So when I graduated law school, it was 2009. So was practicing until about 2014-15, then went to Mariner Wealth Advisors for about 3 years. So we're talking like mid-teens, 2015-16-17. And back then too, there weren't that many full integrators. Advisors didn't have that many places to call when they were thinking about, I'm exhausted, I don't want to wear all of the hats. There weren't that many firms out there. So it's so interesting seeing now, I think makers probably have a list of 80 firms that they could potentially match make with or introduce a prospective seller to. 10 years ago, that just was not the case. It's wild how fast it's evolved. And I think a lot of it is probably due to private equity coming into the space and giving firms more capital and more resources and giving them this brain trust to really invest in the advisors and the
client. And like you said, and like whatever's in the water there in Kansas City.
Because
it is crazy what a center for mega RIAs Kansas City is.
It is. Like really great advisors, great leaders. When I was at Mariner Wealth Advisors for about 3 years, I met John Bunch, who was at a mutual fund store. And it's also crazy that 10, 15 years ago, if you were a 5 or 10 billion AUM RIA, you were really big.
Oh, yeah. I can go back further than that. When I started in the RIA industry and like started looking at it in 04 and really launched, you know, my last company, Jefferson National, into the RIA space, I mean, there weren't more than a couple dozen firms who had $1 billion, let alone five. I mean, you were five, you were a monster.
Yep, so that's right. I think that the mutual fund store was one of the 10 largest RIAs and merged with Financial Engines. And I thought that was exciting. Financial Engines was publicly traded. I know Brian Cave, Leighton Paisner was a really large international firm. And so that would just be really interesting to go experience what a publicly traded company was. Ultimately, John Bunch decided to take that company private, which I think was a really good decision. But it was still a really large company and learned lots of different things, especially with it having the workplace and robo-advisor background. That was so unique and different.
Yeah. And so you're at Mariner and you're kind of paving the way, creating some blueprints for RIA M&A. And you did that for three years. And then you got lured away into another area of the Kansas City financial services mafia. there, going down a bit of a different path.
Yeah. And I had started at Mariner, I'd started wearing some different hats. I started overseeing the firms that we'd acquired. At that point, there was 26 firms. There was, I think, 15 wealth management firms and ancillary services. And you couldn't have all of those people, the founders, continue to report to the CEO. Mm-hmm. That worked when you'd only, maybe you had five or so, maybe 10, but that model had to change. So that's when I was like, okay, I really do like working with advisors and being more involved in the business.
Yep.
And help business owners run better businesses. We're also at a different model than it is a full integrator, but those founders were still heavily involved in the day-to-day. So I got the bug for sure of like, I want to work more in the business and with financial engines merging with mutual funds, or they were building something new too and trying to figure out how do you bring digital and robo advice and 401k together with human advisors. So there was just a lot of opportunity to build out some new things there.
So that's where you connected with John Bunch.
Yeah, that's right.
That. And then he's been an important figure for your career.
He has. Yeah, he's the GOAT, I feel like, in our industry. So we worked together for a few years. He ultimately left and went overseas to a really large asset manager and wealth management firm and tax and accounting firm in London. We stayed in touch, though. And when he came back to the States, I had recently left Edelman Financial Engines to go to a startup with some friends from Mariner, actually. But we stayed in touch, and last year decided it was the right time to join him. And that's how I landed at Allworth to lead mergers and acquisitions as of May last year.
Yeah, John's had, I hate to say under the radar, because certainly if you're in the industry, you know who John Bunch is. But he's not as out there as some CEOs. But I mean, he's got a long legacy of Schwab and the mutual fund store, which is a pretty innovative direct-to-consumer offering back when having stores really almost in strip malls and building out and then Financial Engines and Allworth and TD Ameritrade for a while. John's kind of been a real pioneer in the RIA channel in many different regards and is not, I think, as well known as some others.
I know, because he's not out there necessarily on social media posting stuff. But when you meet John, you'll never forget him, though. That's for sure. He is very authentic. He connects with advisors unlike anyone I've ever seen, because it is actually authentic and real, and they know it. So you just feel something very different when you work at a firm that's led by him, when you're an advisor working with him. So it's pretty special. He has a very loyal following for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. He's a great guy and super smart and a very effective guy. So you know, a lot of people can be very smart, but then got to implement and you got to be effective.
That's
and John's really been quite effective and successful in his life in many different roles.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of firms honestly have the same ideas, but the firms that can execute really well are the firms that win. I feel like John is probably one of the most innovative, creative people I've ever met. But ability to execute definitely creates a pretty big gap.
Yes. So talk a little bit about Allworth. A few years ago, there probably weren't that many firms that were doing acquisitions, roll-ups, consolidating, whatever you want to call it. And now it seems like there's another one popping up every day or every week, at least with some new private equity backer coming into the game. So talk about a couple things. One, how hard is it for somebody new coming into the space in your estimation? And why do the established firms who've been doing it a little while, like Allworth and some others, have an advantage? What do you see in that?
Yeah, I think it's very hard now to come into the space because of complexity with regulation, with cost of technology, with client expectations of what they're going to get. You need a certain amount of scale to really invest in what I'd call the client's value prop. And what is that client experience? I've talked to so many firms who have tried to do tax prep, who've tried to do estate planning, and they end up either shutting it down or they say, raise their hand and they want to sell, because it's really hard. And a lot of advisors become advisors because they're really good with clients and they're good at solving problems. But then if you really want to grow, then you do have to make a choice for the most part. Do you want to be a people leader and do you want to be an operator and a visionary and build the firm? Or do you want to spend time with clients? So I think it's really hard right now if you're going to start from scratch. There's so many clients in need, though, I will say that.
Yep.
So many clients who are looking for financial advisors. I think there's going to be a shortage with financial advisors. So it's interesting that we've got so much demand, and I think the demand is going to continue for comprehensive advice to talk to a trusted financial advisor, but I don't know if the supply is really there and the complexity it takes to deliver it, honestly.
Yeah, because I mean, that's one of the big changes I've certainly seen in the last 20 years is RIAs were asset managers in 05, right? Financial planning, maybe some said they did financial planning. They kind of sort of maybe did. The financial plan was more of like, boy, that seems like a lot of work for not a lot of money. And now I think everybody's realized that's the centerpiece of the client relationship.
It is. I think it's still evolving. We're now, it's more about life goals. And now there's behavioral finance and you're more a personal coach and you're pulling in the kids and helping with family dynamics. And now we've got this sandwich generation where you've got folks that are like caring for their elderly parents and don't know how to navigate that. And you still have kids that are going off to college and you need to talk to someone. So it's interesting that it's definitely evolved to where now they're a life coach, essentially.
Right, right. And you know, as I look at it, like from our seat, you really need the scale of a larger firm to deliver all those things. Like you couldn't think about doing that if you were simply even a billion-dollar firm these days. That probably means you've got 8 advisors, you know, maybe 10 advisors. Maybe you've got a staff of 20 to 30 people. Like all of the things that you need to do, it gets really hard unless you've got an incredible outsource network of things you're aggregating to deliver all the things an advisor is expected to do in today's world. Is that part of your pitch as you talk to firms?
Yeah, it is. And what's so interesting too is like now there's so many different models, like depending on the level of autonomy that you want, like there's always trade-offs in every decision, but do you want control of your brand? Do you not care about that? Mm-hmm. And like, what are the things that are really important for you to keep and to be flexible around? So now you've got corporate RIA platforms. Now you've got tons of TAMPs out there if you just want to outsource certain functions. With all, we are a partnership model. So a little bit different. So, I mean, we're immediately going to kind of say we're not a fit for certain firms if they don't want an actual partnership model.
So define that. Partnership model. Go ahead.
So think of it honestly this way. I mean, I think it's really simple. We talk to so many firms where there's maybe 2, 3, 4, a handful of partners that are running the business. Allworth is the same concept. We have 175 though. There's 175 partners running, like who are delivering advice in their local market, really driving the culture and the feel of that market. But they're economically aligned. We've got one class of ownership, so everyone is aligned. We're really trying to build something special to have a 100-year firm that advisors who want to be known for delivering the best advice possible to clients for helping as many people as they can come. But you don't have to be bogged down with dealing with an SEC exam and dealing with and cybersecurity threats. I think that's like coming up more and more where advisors are so concerned about data security, about protecting their clients to make sure that they don't fall for scammers and crazy things that are happening. And so there's a lot of concern around that. So you get those things off your plate, but still be a partner. It's just a larger partnership. That's a really, really good fit. So those are the types of folks that we're looking for. Not necessarily advisors are like, I've never had a boss. I don't want a boss. I don't want to be held accountable.
Right.
To anyone else, their sole proprietor. There obviously are some are out there where they still want to be part of a partnership, but a lot of the firms that we work with are a partnership or they have a G2 that they've really brought into the business and believe in, and they want a strong succession plan for that G2 advisor and partner that they already have on board.
Yeah, there's just so much to talk about all this. So when you're talking to firms now, do they even know yet that I want a partnership model, I don't want a partnership model, I want to retain my brand, I don't want to retain my brand, or you start... A lot of them are just kind of fishing out there, seeing what's available, see what the options are. What do you see?
The full gambit. There are some that just want a consultant. They just want to talk. They just want to be educated because they don't know. Some now really know because LinkedIn is pretty powerful. ChatGPT is really powerful. Yes. There's more bankers than ever too. And you've got options for bankers you can hire. So a lot of firms hire a banker. But I'm seeing a lot that don't hire bankers too, because you have so much information, you can do your research and reach out. So it does run the gambit, I feel like, of firms that know exactly what they want. And then some that are like, help educate me. And where do you fall in this spectrum of partnership model versus like, I'm fully independent. I have my own brand. I kind of get to do everything that I want to, from like owning all of my own tech. I want to keep all of that. We're obviously not going to necessarily be a fit for someone who wants 100% full control. They just want to keep running their business.
Right.
We want someone that is okay giving up all the back office and giving up their brand in exchange for leads and brand development and all the other things that come with a unified brand.
Yeah. Well, I'll just make a quick note on working with Allworth as a partner and provider. This, for any advisors thinking about working with Allworth, incredibly diligent about protecting their advisors and making sure, like, they want to know literally as we're working with you guys, how many keystrokes, like how long is this going to take our advisors to engage with us? Because we're going to control the amount of time. We want to make sure they're getting maximum benefit of their time used. And we also see Allworth being, you know, a real leader in tech. We're implementing a lot of AI, a lot of automation, investing in technology. Allworth's neck and neck with us as we continue to work together and find efficiencies. And that's awesome.
Here's the way I think about it. It's really simple. Like, our job is to make our advisors look like heroes to their clients.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. Put them in the center. If you look like a hero, then we all win. So when we're focused on technology enhancements and AI and all of the things that we're practice management that we're really pouring resources in, it's because we want our advisors to look like a hero for their clients.
All right. I'm going to ask you some unfair questions. So what's your batting average? Like, when you're looking at firms and you're like, okay, I want this one. I really like this firm. I really like this advisor. What's your batting average? You 50%, 75%? What do you got?
So we're pretty selective and we take pride in a really disciplined approach. And it is because all of our advisors are partners. And so we want to put on that partnership hat of, if we were going to introduce someone to other advisors in the firm, would they say, like, yes, we want to lock arms with you. We want to build something special together.
Yep.
So we're very disciplined in our approach. It's so hard to talk about cultural fit, but you do have to assess that. It's different for every firm. And like, what does that mean? It's really hard to define. But we are looking for a firm that is going to be aligned with growth, with really putting clients first and who want to invest in bringing them as many services as possible. And having a team approach, you can't build a 100-year company if you don't have a team approach and you don't have G2 advisors or have the desire to let us hire one and bring one into your office if there isn't one. But we're really looking for teamwork. And so, and you can tell by the questions that are asked. So as far as batting average, we're not falling in love and saying yes to 75 or 50% of firms. It's probably less than 10%. A lot of firms are, not a lot, but there are some you can tell it is more transactional and they're looking for a succession play. It's not that we're not against succession plays, but there does have to be that fit of, do you have a team around you that we can invest in? Or why haven't you hired a team? And can we help with that? But ultimately, we want to see you triple in size and take your firm from $500 million to $1.5 billion, or from $1 billion to three to five to 10. Like, we want people who are really focused on that. So that does weed some people out.
The culture thing is so important in any business. When you talk about mergers and acquisitions, and to the degrees that you guys are doing them, massively important, because you always hear they always fail because of culture. The business fit can be kind of obvious or good, and they fail on culture. And I remember a simple vetting question my first boss told me about, like, interviewing people, because he believed in culture, was, can you go on a 3-day business trip with this person?
Yep.
Overnight, anyone can handle like a 1-day business trip with anyone. You can kind of power through that. But like 3 days where you're spending lots of time with this person, meals, travel, all that, that's been a pretty simple gauge of culture.
Even like the littlest things, you spend a full day with someone, you'll do dinner. If it doesn't end with a hug, like, something went awry. We didn't fully connect the way we should have. If you're not ending with, some people obviously don't want to be hugged. But for the most part, though, it's like you should feel comfortable, not just like shaking hands like it's a transaction. If you've spent a lot of time together and dug into every aspect of your business and mapped out what the future looks like together, you should be fired up. And you know at the end, and those are the firms you end up. And a lot of times it's mutual, honestly. You just end up parting ways and say it's not there.
So give me a little bit of the structure of Allworth, because you recently had a new investor come in.
That's right.
And it was originally, back when, Hanson McLean, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean built a lot on a radio show back in the day, I think, as many large RIA firms were. And what's that evolution been for, and where does Allworth kind of stand right now in terms of its ownership structure and where you're going?
I'm glad you asked that question, because I actually do think it's important to understand a firm's history and to understand a firm's DNA and really get to know the firm's leadership team when you're making a decision. When John called me and talked to me about Allworth and what he was doing, I really loved the Allworth story and really fell in love with it for a couple of reasons. One is it started with niches, which I think is really, really important. We shouldn't kid ourselves. We are in a professional services industry because it's all about quality of advice that you're giving to your clients. You are delivering a professional service, and having niches is really important. So Allworth, that's grounded in Allworth's DNA, is to focus on like very specific client problems and saying like, how can we help clients with these problems solve them? And so that's ingrained in the DNA. We've now got $5 billion in target market assets across dentists, airline pilots, utility company employees, divorcees. That's in the DNA. And then also marketing. Like, I would say that Allworth started also as a marketing company.
Yep.
And that's really important, is growth in your DNA, and not did you found the firm and did you grow based on custodial referral channel?
Right.
And a custodian was giving you leads. It creates a very different DNA and culture within your firm and the way that advisors are interacting with you and their clients when you started and have that marketing culture in your DNA. And then also a technology company. I think Allworth invested really heavy in technology early, into data, and saying like, how can we use data to deliver a better client experience? And so I think you're going to see the best RAs out there that are going to feel like professional services firms, but also marketing companies and technology companies. And like, if you can bring all of that together, that's pretty special. So Allworth started in such a unique situation with the radio show, with the niche marketing, with the partnership model, but did bring on capital partners in 2017. But a lot of that's, hey, we're on to something really special. If we could have a capital partner who could help us touch more, impact more advisors in order to help more clients, we should do that because we really believe in it. So we're now on our third round of private equity partnership with Integrum, Lightyear, and Ontario that recently. I think that went live last week, but we're really, really excited about it and about the partnership with them because we think now the next 5, 10, 15, 20, 100 years are going to be really special. We're set up in a great position to invest in advisor to clients.
Yeah, that's awesome. And from our seat, we get to see behind the curtains quite a lot because, you know, when we're working with firms, we're doing it in many different ways. Maybe we're helping move some old annuities into fee-based to better the client position. Maybe we're doing marketing with them to help attract new clients by leveraging our tech and our offerings. So you get to see all those things. You get to see the operational, you know, how do they operate? How does the firm work with its advisors? Is there a cohesion there? Is there a good marketing engine that can work? And not all of them are that way. A lot of them are kind of a loose affiliation almost, and you know, with aspirations to integrate and have things be more seamless. But Allworth is impressive as a partner.
We try to be really intentional about what's forced and where there's flexibility and where advisors can freestyle it. And like, you need to pick the things that actually really matter. Because ultimately, you want advisors that are happy and come to work really excited. Something John says a lot, and I love when he says it because I think it really resonates, is we want our advisors to be committed and not compliant. And it makes a really big difference. So when you're talking about integration, what are those things that really matter? And ultimately, the advisors need to have that deep relationship with their clients. But if we can take the technology stuff off their plate, makes a really big difference.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that matters to me personally is the commitment to doing right by the client. Because, I mean, I've spent my career doing that. And you know, every company I've built has been focused on the client or the end consumer to give them better products. And there are people who always say that, but then there are people who really mean it. And I know, look, I've known Scott Hansen for a long time now. And it was a while, but I had to convince him that we're doing annuities differently here. And what we're doing does provide great consumer value. And these aren't your father's and you know annuities, so to speak. So, I mean, there was a you know a good vetting through the original Scott and Pat, but on through. And you can see it as a firm culture. You do care about doing right by the client.
Yeah, that was really important to me. I was at a firm called Triad Wealth for 2 years. And I honestly, I didn't even know what a field marketing organization or FMO was.
Right.
When I left, I went with two friends from Mariner. They were from Mariner Wealth Advisors. I was obviously at Edelman. But I didn't know what that was. So got a ton of education and perspective on the industry that I didn't necessarily know. I barely even understood, honestly, what a corporate RIA was. Because I'd only been in this W-2 or partnership model. And so it was really important, you know, I was talking with John of what are we doing to make sure that clients' interests are truly at the center of decisions. I mean, you're doing what's best for them. I didn't follow DPL, actually, when I was at Triad Wealth. And there were a few advisors that had asked about it. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, this wasn't, either these products really didn't exist, or the education. And it's like, oh, yeah, you can absolutely take the client out of a product that's really not best for them and put them in a better product that's fee-based. So there are advisors asking questions about it and wanting to better understand it. And you know, obviously, DPL is really leading the way on that as a solution. And it makes a big difference in M&A too. It really is helpful having conversation with advisors of like, what are you doing with your clients who have legacy annuity products? And like, how can you add more value? I mean, that's such a win when you're going into a partnership and you can actually go to some of your clients and say, hey, I'm doing this partnership. Here's all the great things. Oh, and also I can help you with these things that didn't even know were an option before.
Yeah. And I mean, that's been part of the impetus for building DPL is, you know, I think annuities are valuable products. They're great, valuable structures. And it's been like two advisor types, you know, really to serve. The traditional RIA has been fee only, and now they can use annuities, insurance, and do it in a way that works in their model. They can be in an advice model. And then the hybrid, now you can leave your broker dealer. You don't need the broker dealer anymore. And you can move all of your clients into an advice model. And being able to solve for the existing annuities is also important because while I can understand that and I agree with it, it's like, okay, but I have this problem of all this revenue I'm getting from this old book of annuities. And so our ability now to solve for that really helps accelerate the adoption going forward of leveraging low-cost commission-free products.
Yeah, I think the mistake I see, there's just so much more education and information out there now of advisors didn't know what they didn't know 10 years ago. Technology has changed, products have changed. But I think one of the biggest mistakes is you get trained, or if you believe like there has to be one way to do things, or like this is the default recommendation. Yep. And I think just clients are seeking and clients want and need an advisor that's going to look at like, what's your actual situation? What's your risk tolerance? What are your income needs? What are your liquidity needs? What are your short-term goals, your long-term goals? Like all these big picture items, and then have a toolbox that's actually full and you can pull out the right tools in order to help accomplish the client's goals. But if you just spread it like peanut butter for every single client, that's not going to work. That's a winning recipe at all.
Turn it back to Allworth for a minute. So what are some of Allworth's goals? Where do you want to be in the next few years, next 10 years? I know you said you want to be around for 100.
Yeah, that's right.
What are some more short-term goals?
Yeah, so we're at $38 billion in AUM right now. We obviously want to grow, but I think it's really important that we don't necessarily, I'm not going to come out there and say, well, we want to be at 50 within X period of years. It's we want to grow intentionally and with purpose. Mm-hmm. I think growth can actually be a silent killer. If you're not really intentional about your growth and have a North Star and be really disciplined in the path to get there, just like with a financial plan, it's going to move. You're going to get off and you're going to get back on course and help navigate that. But we want to grow with purpose. We want to grow very intentionally. And it's going to be all about finding the right partners and empowering our current partners to help more clients. So what we're really focused on is our client experience, really enhancing that. We've invested heavily in tax and accounting, providing tax prep in-house, estate planning in-house. I'm just really continuing to build out all of those ancillary services so that the client truly does have a one-stop shop. So we're laser focused on building that out, adding more scale. And we want to be known for having the most talented advisors and having the most talented advanced planning team and support team. And it's a place that people will want to run to if they're like, I want to build something special. I want to grow with purpose. I want to help as many clients as possible. And we want to be known for delivering the absolute best advice. Mm-hmm. For clients who are going through life transitions, whether it's a retirement, inheritance, a spouse passing away, the clients will know they can pick up the phone and call an advisor at Allworth. We're trying to build something that special.
That's terrific. And when you're looking now at your expansion, do you have things that you're focused on, whether it's geography or skill sets or anything like that?
So geography, yes, for sure. I do think that, especially with technology and digital and people wanting to work from home, that continuing to invest in various people centers so that the younger generation can actually go into an office and have some apprenticeship and have some training. You can do it virtually, and that's great. But I think there's going to be so much talent that's up for grabs coming out of different colleges and universities across the country. So if you can really invest and create unique special cultures within various people centers across the country, and that's such a great way to add talent. And we're going to need to. There's a lot of advisors that are retiring, and there's going to be a talent shortage. And the demand for advice has actually gone up. More and more clients want the advice, and we've got to make sure that we can deliver it to them. So we're really trying to invest in some of our existing people centers in critical markets, but then we also want to expand into new markets as well. So we've got a geographic expansion strategy where we want to expand, and we have 40 offices right now across the country. Dallas is a big people center, Indy, Boston, Northern California. There's a handful of others that we really want to invest in, but then we also want to expand in new markets like Florida, Southern California, Tennessee, the Northeastern Seaboard. We've really been trying to focus on growing up there too. So that's one angle. And then the other two is capabilities and then talent. So we want to add new capabilities. So think like business valuation, property and casualty, things that can really help clients solve specific problems. And then just talented advisors that have target niches that can actually serve clients who have estate planning and tax planning needs. And they don't need to go 10 feet deep. We don't necessarily need that, but we need advisors that really do view themselves as that life coach that can help the client navigate and know how to pull in the experts that we're surrounding them with. So we're looking for talent, capabilities, and the right locations.
Yeah, that's such the new definition, that financial life coach or, you know, that central quarterback for your financial life. And boy, when I was first in this market, it's all about, I'm a portfolio manager. Yeah, I'm rep as portfolio manager. I manage client assets. That's what makes me who I am, what makes our firm who we are. And boy, that is going, I think, very quickly by the wayside.
And even just selling products, like just insurance sales of, I still think you see, obviously we still see some of that of you're a portfolio manager or you're a product salesman. And clients don't want that. They want comprehensive advice. They want someone who can connect all of the dots and quarterback the right relationships in the client life.
If a client doesn't know that they want that, it's only because they haven't been exposed to that. As soon as they hear one of their friends talking about, my financial advisor does all these things for me. Yeah. What a great firm I work with. Anybody who's not offering those kind of things are going to struggle.
They are. What's interesting, though, sometimes it's really hard to tell as a client, what are you actually getting? I played a fun game with my husband where I showed him three different websites for financial advisors. And I asked him to pick the one that was a comprehensive wealth advisor, that fiduciary, like all the things that you would want if you wanted to go to someone conflict-free, looking at your whole life to deliver recommendations and an implementation plan that would help you accomplish those goals. And he definitely picked the wrong one.
Right.
He picked the one that like had very, very little assets under management and was definitely selling products. Yeah. But the website was amazing.
We may have even joked about this before, but you can read a website where an advisor is talking about, I do asset management and tax planning and retirement income advice and all that. And what that person does is sell fixed index annuities.
That's right. Yes, you can solve investment planning, income planning, tax planning, legacy planning. You can do everything with the product.
Right. So you get one product and I've got all these great services. So
yeah, that's great.
Super interesting.
Yeah, great. That was eye-opening though when he picked the wrong one. I was like, oh yeah, we have work to do as an industry to make sure clients know who they're working with, because it's really hard. Things get just buried in disclosures at the bottom of websites and in regulatory filings.
Yes. And you start to see now more RIA firms actually with television ads becoming more well-known out there. You see Schwab advertising the fiduciary independent model. I think clients are definitely becoming much more aware of the independent model and even of the specific firms. And They know what a fiduciary is now, where even I would say 5 years ago, that might not be the case.
That's right. I mean, it's like pretty mind-blowing too. I mean, my parents, who I never thought would be technologically savvy, they have iPhones, they use ChatGPT. I mean, I think my dad probably uses it multiple times a day. Like, I almost like he treats it like a human. And I think that is now more and more common with retirees. If we think that they're not technologically advanced or in accessing technology and doing their research, I think a lot of them are now. That's changing. And if we don't think that the next generation is going to be even more, and they're going to look even more different, I think, in what they want and what they're looking for than the types of clients our advisors are used to servicing.
Yeah. I mean, we see that ourselves. I mean, we get a fair number of consumers coming to us directly because they read about us or they search and they find stuff out about us. And I mean, it's a surprising number who come to us because they're like, I went to my financial advisor and they wouldn't talk to me about an annuity. And so I'm coming to you directly. And we handle clients like that all the time. But to your point, if you're a financial advisor and thinking your clients are older and not going to be up to date on things and whatnot, well, we've got consumers, some of whom might know more about commission-free annuities than some of the advisors we go after.
Yeah, I think it's such an important note too, as an advisor, like, and I think the word insurance, annuities is not a dirty word like it might've been years ago. But you really do, I feel like it's just, you have to have a conversation with your clients and educate them to figure out, like, what are they really trying to accomplish? What's holding them up at night? You want your client to walk away and be like, I never would have thought about a lot of these things that my advisor is making me think about. So you can't bury your head in the sand and not ask the questions. There's never one solution that's going to be right for every client. And for some clients, it might be this investment or that investment or this solution or whatever, but you have to dig deep enough to ask the questions and really show up as an impartial consultant, I think, to find out what they really need. And so you need to know about insurance. You need to know about annuities. You need to know about tax planning strategies. You need to know about all that stuff just so you can navigate the conversation to then make really solid recommendations.
Agreed. It's such an evolving world.
It blows my mind when I talk with advisors that don't actually get insurance policies or like the annuity documents. And if you can't read them, find someone in-house who can use DPL, but like it's low-hanging fruit to add value to the client just by doing a review.
Yes. And also just starting to look at annuities in general. I mean, so many advisors, if you look at academic research, they would, you know, academics, Nobel Prize winners would tell you an annuity should be part of a retirement income strategy for pretty much anybody who's going to take income out of their portfolio. And then you meet advisors who are fiduciaries and in 30 years have never met anyone they thought could use an annuity. Right. So you see this dichotomy. And I think that's a lot of the history of the product being sold and being commissioned and all of that, that you know, you did have fiduciaries who just kind of ignored them for a long time, despite what the academics might say. And we just try to eliminate those conflicts and make the products low cost and usable and just change that dynamic.
I think it's important too, that there's such a behavioral side to the relationship between an advisor and their client. And like for my parents, for instance, like I know they're used to having a paycheck for their whole life. They want to know that they're going to have enough money every single year. And so as an advisor to help navigate that and be really well-informed and educated on all of the solutions, because no matter what you say to someone, if they're used to having a paycheck every month or they want the security, like you have to help navigate that and telling them like, no, you shouldn't feel that way. Like that's not going to go over well.
Yes. Well, and we've got a lot of work to do on the education. I was recently talking with an advisor and she was saying like, why would I ever use a fixed indexed annuity? I'd been saying it's because, you know, lack of education. And I said, well, you just proved my point. You just asked me, why would I ever do this? And I can tell you why from an investment perspective, as well as a you know, behavioral perspective, which is equally as important. And too many advisors, again, having grown up as pure asset managers, they don't have that soft side. It's like, listen, you should be willing to take the market risks. You should be educated on the fact that you should be okay and live with the probabilities and uncertainty. Because that's what they're used to, but that doesn't mean clients are.
Yeah. It's just all about trade-offs too. And just being honest with yourself of like, regardless of what recommendation you make as an advisor, but whether it's an investment solution, a product, whatever, like know what the trade-offs are and then make sure the client understands what they are. But you have to obviously be educated to even have that conversation. But there's always a trade-off, especially if you don't want as much risk. You want more safety. Well, that means you're probably not going to have as high of returns. But just really being able to navigate all the trade-offs that are at play of what you get, depending on really what you want. If you want liquidity, if you want income, if you want legacy planning, all of those things are such important levers to explore.
Yes. Well, Sarah, the time has flown. I appreciate we could talk forever. I feel like there's so much to cover and so many things to get into. It's been such a dynamic industry, and we've both seen quite a lot of evolution and change in it. And I appreciate you sharing your insights and hearing more about Allworth for those advisors who are starting to think about whether they're looking at succession planning or they're looking potentially selling their business, joining a larger firm, whatever their motivations, contacting Allworth, I think, should be on the list.
Thank you so much, David. I really appreciate the time and appreciate the partnership with DPL.
Awesome. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you for listening. To check out other DPL podcasts, visit our YouTube page. You can also visit dpl.com for more information.